Hello and welcome to Better Construction with Sean McStay, the podcast where we discuss design and construction techniques, products, and details that lead to a better built environment. All right, and welcome to Better Construction. Today, I am very happy to have with me Mike Holmes Jr. Mike doesn't need much of an introduction for most of my audience. We've seen him on TV and internet for a number of years now. Mike, it's wonderful to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's great to be here chatting with you, Sean. I'm happy to join.
Great. Well, for the, you know, maybe two or three people who don't know who you are yet, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you kind of got into the construction industry.
I guess I'll start with how I got into the construction industry. For those who don't know who I am or what I do, I work on a show called Homes and Homes. We've done Homes on Homes, Homes Makes It Right, Homes Inspections, pretty much homes, and then throw another word in front of it. We've done that. I got into the construction industry kind of by fluke. At first, what happened was that I never wanted to actually get into the construction industry. At the time, I wanted to get into firefighting. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. And then my dad said, you know, how'd you like to make some money and work for me during the summers? So I was 14 years old and I worked for my dad during the summer. And there was something about working with my hands that I loved and doing different things every day, which is why I think being a general contractor was really appealing to me. And I just did it more and more. I did it every summer. I took half a semester off. A full semester off in high school just to continue working. I did full semester co-op working for my dad. And then right after high school, got into it. And yeah, that's kind of how I started getting into it.
Interesting. So you'd mentioned maybe thinking about being a firefighter. Is that because you knew somebody who was one, or was it just a kind of an interest for you growing up?
I think the firefighting I saw... there was always something appealing to me about helping people or saving people. Or, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be like Batman. I wanted to be a superhero. And then I saw firefighters as, you know, that kind of role. They'd go into burning buildings and risk their own lives and try and help people. And that was appealing to me. And then what changed was just helping people through construction. And that is something I think, to be honest, that was the most appealing thing to me. I loved working with my hands, but I loved helping people. And that's one of the really unique things about our job is, you know, we get to use the television and our platform to help people change their lives and help them get out of situations that normally they might not be able to.
That makes a lot of sense. Definitely. I mean, you guys have helped hundreds or, you know, potentially even thousands of people now through all the different shows and events and such that you've done. So you were talking a bit about kind of your passion for working with your hands and being a general contractor. Obviously, you come by that a bit naturally, but what is it about, you know, kind of building things that really appeals to you so strongly?
At first, I'll be honest, it was the physical part of it. I loved working. I loved being physical. I loved doing so many different jobs. And then I started to enjoy carpentry a lot more. So, you know, it started with framing and then learning that side of it and then trim work. And then I started to want to build custom carpentry projects. And then I actually went to school for carpentry. So I went to George Brown College in Toronto and finished my 3-year apprenticeship program there. So it was just building something from start to finish that really caught my interest. And then it almost became a challenge to myself to see how I would learn from something, how I would learn from a mistake, and then how I could improve it the next time.
Okay. And so obviously, you know, we see you on TV doing all these different projects, but in, you know, I would hate to say in real life, but in your regular life, you are a licensed contractor as well. Do you take on many projects outside of, you know, the stuff that you do for your shows, or is that most of it?
So now back, I guess a couple of years ago, that was, I would do some side jobs here and there, but it's always been a full-time job. We're always filming 12 months of the year, so it kind of monopolizes our time. We did have a private construction business as well, but then just with all of our focus and everything that happens with the television side, it's very demanding. We decided to put all of our focus into that and use the construction crew we have to fully support that. So we don't really do a lot of private construction on the side. We're pretty busy with the show.
Okay. And so a lot of my listeners are small construction companies, some medium-sized ones as well, but a lot of them are small and, you know, they're doing a lot of the on-site stuff as well as running the company. Mm-hmm. And obviously a big challenge for them is time management. So yeah. I'm curious to hear from you, you know, do you have some tips on time management? What are some of the things that you use because you have a very full schedule?
You know what? My wife has helped me a ton with my time management. I found that the best thing that I can do is kind of write down a schedule of things I need to get done. She's always told me, you know, write it down. And right now, currently, as well as filming, I'm also enrolled in a university schooling. So I'm studying business management as well. Something I've wanted to take on. So I'm learning a lot about time management. And I think there's so many distractions. It's so easy to procrastinate, but I think you just have to kind of set the distractions aside, sit down, do it, write it down, whether it's come up with a list, especially with technologies. Nowadays, it's easy to just, you know, oh, I'll go on Instagram, I'll go on Facebook, whatever it is. But I mean, just do it. It's, you know, I find it doesn't actually take as long as you think it will. It's so easy to psych yourself out before you actually do something.
You did mention kind of technologies having potentially a negative effect, which unfortunately we all know they can. But I have seen a big change in the construction market in the last, you know, 5 years with more technology being brought onto the job site, whether that be job planning tools or actually just the tools themselves becoming more advanced. What's kind of your feedback on that?
I think it's brilliant. I mean, there's definitely a lot of benefits to technology on the job site. We use a program for our project managing, which it keeps us all on the same page. If anyone has any comments, criticism, it's easy to all just, you know, start from that one app. Then it also updates the trades. So if, you know, if we have, you know, maybe our, let's say our plumbers have an issue and maybe let's say a permit is taking some time to go through, then that will automatically push everything else back and allow us to continue on time and keep everyone updated rather than before having to call everyone, message everyone, and try and do it independently.
And how about the actual physical tools themselves? I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot less electrical cords running around job sites these days, but is there anything that has changed kind of in the last number of years that you find like, how did I do this before?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. There are so many. I think about when I was 14 and I remember getting my first, I think it was a 6-pack, and I had a circular saw, a reciprocating saw, a hammer drill, maybe it was a 4-pack and an impact drill. And I was like, oh, these are the bee's knees. And they had the biggest batteries on them that weighed a ton. And now we move forward to these lithium ion batteries, these light tools that have so much more power. I mean, that alone has changed the game. Now that some of the, DeWalt makes a cordless miter saw and a cordless table saw. I don't know how many projects I've built with that. Or there's this Shaper Origin. It's essentially a handheld CNC machine. It's kind of like a video game. There's a screen on top and it's so cool. So you don't need this massive CNC machine anymore, which, I mean, they have their different purposes, but you can bring this onto a job site and you can router now into the flooring a unique design and do inlays in the flooring or on wall art, or like so much has changed over the years and I see it rapidly changing. And I think it's really exciting. I mean, obviously there's negative sides to the technology, but I'd like to think there's more positive than negative, especially when it comes to managing our time, the tool side of things. And then the products and materials on site have improved greatly over the years.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've seen a lot of products come in from overseas, ones developed locally here as well. There certainly is a pretty wide selection of products being available. When you guys are determining which products to use on a job site, obviously the cost and the need of the project come into mind, but are there any other kind of characteristics that you really look for when you're choosing kind of which companies to work with?
So our brand is, especially being in the spotlight, it's very important that the companies that you work with, the trades that you work with, the products that you use, in our eyes at least, are top notch. We want to make sure we're not working with people that have a bad reputation or products that are faulty. It's very important to us to use top quality stuff because that's what we preach. We preach that we need to build for the next generation. We preach that we need energy efficient homes. We preach about proper indoor air quality. So we do definitely filter trades, products, and companies that we work with. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. That for sure does. So taking a step back from there, kind of switching gears a little bit, when you come on to a new project, describe for me a little bit kind of your process. Let's say in this case, it's a new construction build. At what point do you typically get involved, and what are kind of the key things that you're looking to set up as you get into that new project?
For a new build, we haven't done a new build in a little while, but I mean, we use architects. Like, we have architects and engineers. Our vice president of the company is an architect himself. So I would say it starts right from the, I've done foundation pours. I've assisted in that. But I'd say nowadays, just help out where we can. We film the whole process. So we do have a lead general on the site who runs the job site. At one point, I was trying to kind of play general contractor, television host, laborer, kind of trying to juggle all of them. And I found that, you know, I wanted to make sure what I do really well. And I found myself dropping the balls here or there. So by having a general contract lead on site, I think it's best to just always defer to them. And we try not to micromanage when we can. Obviously, we're going to have differences of opinions naturally, but from start to finish, we just work together. We have our products that we use. We have trades that we rely on. They're pretty consistent throughout. I'd say it looks very similar to regular construction, other than when camera is on site. I'd say we probably move at 25% of the pace of, you know, of our normal pace, because, you know, we have to tell the story. People need to see kind of each step of what's happening. We have to make sure that everything's being caught, that of the story that we need to tell.
Okay, and that kind of brings me into my next question on the camera side of things. When people are watching the show, obviously, it's I'm always kind of curious about behind the scenes. You said it's about 25% of the speed. I get where that's coming from for mm-hmm. sure. What are some of the other kind of fun behind the scenes type of things that really change from, say, a standard working construction site?
So from probably 14 years old to 17, I worked part-time. I'm going to answer this in a long version. From, I think, 17 to, let's say, 24, I pretty much worked behind the camera. Like, I was really focused on being a contractor. I wasn't really interested in the television side. And then just kind of happened naturally and evolved that, you know, cameras started to get interested more. The producers, the network started to like what they saw. So I really saw on the construction side of it, how that evolved. And then the television show has actually, it's brought so much more opportunity. You can do so much more, just the platform alone, you can reach so many more people. But there's so much fun we've had. I mean, we've done sumo battles. We've done, you know, so many different excursions. We've done so, like, I've gone to Leipzig in Germany to film us being at the World Skills competitions, where if anyone hasn't heard of it, World Skills and Skills Canada, Skills USA, no matter where you're from, it's essentially the Olympics for the skilled trades. If you haven't heard of it, I would highly suggest to check it out, because it is incredible. I think for the world skills, you have to be under 25. And these are some of the most talented people I've met, and they're so young. So it's really inspiring to see the next generation of skilled trades people so talented and so committed to what they do.
Very interesting. Yeah, I'd imagine there's lots of cool opportunities like that. So kind of two of the main things that I wanted to touch on when I, you know, found out that you're going to be on the show. One is talking a bit about renovations, because renovations are obviously a really key way to get high performance and better construction into the lives of more people than just strictly new build. And then the second one is talking on the idea of high performance and kind of how that term has evolved over the years. But starting with renovations, you guys are obviously very well known for going into places that maybe have not had the best work done or mm-hmm. have had stuff missed, and kind of going into the walls, going into the different structures and finding issues. One thing that I'm always curious about, and this is maybe not specifically for the TV show, but just more for general for people doing this, how do you know how far to go and like where to stop when you're looking at improving these walls and different systems?
Yeah, you know what? There's been so many different scenarios. Like, for instance, there's been times where, much like a real job site, I mean, I say ours are still a real job site, but it's being filmed and budgets are a little bit different, but there are budgets set in place. However, because it's television, it's not necessarily the customer that's paying the entire budget. So there's been situations where, you know, our company, and it's come out of our company's pocket because we know, you know, we're so committed to helping a certain family. Or for instance, a show called Lean on Me we did back when we were doing Homes on Homes. I think this was like, I want to say 2006, 2007, somewhere around there. We actually, the company and my dad paid to put these people up and paid for their rent, paid like a ton of money out of pocket just so they could be helped. They had a job that was done. The contractor didn't put, he built the entire house from scratch with no footings. So the foundation was just sitting on the ground, no footings, and the house started to sink, go figure. So it was like, we just found one problem after another. And then, you know, my dad said, I'm willing to stop filming the show in order to help these people because it's just so important to him and the company and us that we really do the right thing, because we really want people to know and follow suit that, you know, there is a bad rap for contractors out there, but we want to fix that. And we want people to see that there are a lot of good contractors. There's more good contractors than bad out there. Budget side, usually we do a general scope of work and we come in and say, okay, we think there are structural problems. Like we have the telltale signs, much like a lot of other contractors that we see. The thing is, if we come in and we're not going to cover up a structural issues, we're not going to cover up a ton of mold or asbestos. For instance, last season, we were doing a pretty much a full main floor and basement reno, and we found asbestos. So then, you know, we have to talk with the homeowner and say, listen, you know, we have a change work order now. We found asbestos. This is what it's going to cost to properly remediate this. And we have to go back with them. But there is a little bit more leniency because we do have the support of the television. So we try and go the extra mile for the customer.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, being honest, my wife and I watch a lot of HGTV. And there seems to be quite a big difference between different people on it. You know, some of the shows are very focused around getting something turned over quickly and, you know, just kind of making it look very nice. And you know, I'm not saying badly about them because that's the focus of what they're trying to do. Your guys' shows ever since the beginning when they started have always seemed to be quite in depth, almost like, you know, This Old House used to be when Norm was on there. Norm would get into the show and be, oh, Norm's here. We're going to tear the whole foundation apart because exactly. There's something wrong with this.
Yeah.
But I like to see it because it, for me, I mean, I've been selling in the construction industry for 15 years now, mm-hmm. and I've heard some of those bad stories, like you mentioned, about contractors and about the industry in general. And I'm always happy to see kind of it portrayed maybe a little bit more realistically than it might otherwise be.
Yeah, I think sometimes people watch, like I heard when I was in George Brown for my carpentry license, I tried to keep it under, I wanted to hide the fact that I was Mike Holmes' son. I just wanted to go. I wanted to do my schooling and graduate just like everyone else. And eventually it came out and, you know, people started to find out. And I just didn't, I would get some treatment differently. And then I remember one of the teachers, he was a substitute teacher, but he came in and he goes, you know, your show, it makes it look like people, you know, you can renovate a house in an hour. I'm like, what? We're not in control of how long the episode is. And we're very clear that it doesn't just happen overnight. So there's different perception, but we do try and keep it as real as possible.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be the case for sure. If somebody's looking at purchasing a house, what are kind of the key things you think that they should look for? I mean, obviously get a house inspection. Mm-hmm. That's with someone who's reputable in your community. That is crucial. But outside of that, as a homeowner, just to kind of inform themselves, what are some of the things that they can look at or look into?
Yeah, I mean, the age of the house is, I would recommend looking at the age of the house. Any home that was built before 1985, there's a chance there's asbestos in that home. I think it was outlawed in 1980, but obviously, you know, that would take some time for contractors to stop using it. Asbestos is very dangerous for your health. So they use it in the plaster. There's asbestos vinyl tiles, asbestos wrap on your duct line. So knowing that, the age of the home, making sure that, you know, when you do get a home inspection, you test the plaster, you try and take a look in the furnace room if you can get a look at any ductwork, see if there is any asbestos wrap, knob and tube wiring, that's a big one as well, knowing if there's aluminum wiring, checking the grade outside your house, that can be a very good sign. If all the grade on the exterior of your house is graded towards the house, chances are you're going to have water issues unless you have extremely good drainage around the house, which, I mean, if let's say you get a heavy rainfall or snow thaws, that water is all going towards your foundation and your basement if you have one. So, you know, just so those are some of the little things, well, little and big things you want to think about. Looking at doors and windows, whether they're single pane, double pane, energy efficiency is very big, not just for your pocket. I mean, it's going to cost you if you don't have an energy efficient home. If it's not an efficient home, if you have little insulation, if you don't, let's say you have regular light bulbs, if you have baseboard heating, it's going to be a lot more expensive. But it's also, I mean, we're seeing an impact on our environment as well. So we want to build more consciously for that as well. But like you said, the big thing, like I've said this a million times, is hire a home inspector. It's much like hiring a contractor. You don't just hire the first home inspector you meet. You want to do your homework and make sure that you hire a reputable home inspector that they can actually tell you what's going on in your home, because it is a massive purchase and a massive undertaking to own a home. Anyone who owns a home or has owned a home knows that.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that that's, you know, crucial as we have, you know, people that are a little bit younger getting into home ownership now, or at least trying to, and homes across the country. But, you know, out here in near Vancouver where I live, it's such a big, big investment. Even compared to, you know, 15 or 20 years ago, that it's pretty crucial. You get it right the first time, hopefully.
Yeah, we were just out in Vancouver for quite a while. I can't say too much about why, or I'm sure people can figure it out. But anyway, we were doing a little research on real estate price up there. Holy crap, it is super expensive. But I mean, you can see why. It's not as big as Toronto. The real estate is all eaten up. It's not like there's much land in downtown Vancouver that you can build houses on. It's already kind of built. There's not much more room. And then even outskirts of Vancouver, we looked in Victoria, the Sunshine Coast, it is expensive to own a home in BC.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, I've lived here my whole life, and it's the changes in, even out in the Fraser Valley where I live, I mean, there's only so much land because a lot of it is agricultural land reserve, which is good. You know, we need to protect farmland, but at the same time, we're kind of out of space. So it does get a little bit interesting. So switching to my second kind of larger topic question. High performance wise, there's kind of a big debate amongst the building community in Canada, and I've been to a few conferences with CHBA where this has been a very big topic. The idea between instituting high performance construction in code versus having it as a non-mandatory kind of suggested path. Where, and I know it's a bit of a controversial topic, where do you kind of land on that? Do you feel more that we need to institute it, or do you think that it needs to be optional because of perhaps affordability or things like that?
That's a tough question. I do feel like in a way we do need to institute it, but it needs to be done properly. I mean, there's so many different opinions out there, and it's very important that we do have a minimum code, but I've seen some changes in the code that I don't love. Like I feel like just using foam board on the exterior of your home and foregoing sheathing, like I've talked to a lot of framers that have said, you know, that have seen a lot of homes blow over. You know, I know there's a lot of problems there, but energy efficiency is extremely important. I think, listen, our population is going to continue to grow rapidly. We can't just continue to take away from the earth. We have to start thinking, okay, how do we build efficient homes that are going to last, that aren't going to mold, that aren't going to break down in our lifetime? You know, there's the obvious things we need to do for maintenance, but we have the technology. We can do it, whether it's, you know, There are so many different ways, whether you're ICF building, you're insulating from the outside of your home, radiant heating. There's a lot of options to build a more energy efficient home. To answer your question, oh man, the thing is, I think we need to continue to educate the consumer that we can't, it's not about the expensive tile, the countertop. It's really about your wall assembly and what protects your home. That is where we need to invest our money. I think people need to get out of this, like, oh, we need to do a renovation every 5 years because I'm bored of my kitchen. And I get you want to change the countertop, you want to paint, do whatever, but we need to prioritize the health of our home, whether that's thermally breaking your walls, using renewable energy, steel shingles, proper weather barriers on the outside. We really need to drive that message home that that is what is going to matter and that is what's going to protect your investment. So I think I would have to lean more towards making it part of code.
I tend to agree with you. I mean, obviously, I'm very involved in things like Passive House and Net Zero and those types of programs. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a challenge because for the exact reason you pointed out, the consumer is not fully educated yet on the importance of these things. Mm-hmm. And so they're not looking at it from the perspective of they're going to renovate that kitchen in 5 or 10 years. They're thinking, I want the kitchen in my new house or this big, you know, reno that I'm doing to look great. And if I have to take away a bit from the water barrier, the, you know, the windows need to be dual glazed instead of triple or whatever it mm-hmm. might be, I'm not going to notice that as much. Not really thinking that those windows ideally are going to be in the home for the next 25 to 40 years. You know, the wall assembly is probably not going to change for the life of that home as far as insulation yeah. and such, but you are probably going to change your countertops and your flooring in, you know, 10 years or something like that. So I think you make a good point that the consumer needs to be educated as well, not mm-hmm. just us in the building community.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as contractors, we usually get people writing in more than saying it in person. We don't get too many people calling us out in person, although we have had it. People say, you know, you make our job so much harder and, you know, it's unrealistic to build like that, but it's not. Our job as contractors and professionals are to educate the consumer. We have to tell them, this is why you want to use, you know, DITRA on your floor, an uncoupling membrane. This is why you want to thermally break your home. This is why you want to go with a long-lasting shingle over a temporary one. We have to educate on why it is important to spend the extra money and invest on the wall assembly and the exterior of your home. I say the exterior meaning all-encompassing, your foundation, your roof, your insulation, your wall assembly, but also on areas like waterproofing in your bathroom, on the uncoupling membranes, in your basement before you put your flooring down, maybe having a barrier on the floor. Like, we have the technology, we understand how to build better homes, but it goes back to, well, I don't want to spend the money. And like you said, people are, they have an easier time spending money on something they see than something they don't.
I definitely agree with you on that. That's certainly a challenge that we all continue to face. Something that I know is of interest for you and a lot of the people listening, I'm very fortunate to have had a lot of people send in some emails and such, or younger people thinking about getting into the trades. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give a young person thinking about the trades as a career path for them?
Great question. I mean, the advice I would give to someone looking at getting into the trades or anyone coming out of high school is that slow down. The trades, you can try. You can try it for free. You know what I mean? If you go work for someone for a summer, whether it's masonry or general contractor as a laborer, you are going to start at the bottom. Just like I started, you know, you're going to be sweeping, you're going to be hauling stone, buckets, wheelbarrows, you're going to be a gopher, go for coffee, go for lumber, go get this, go get that. It is a lot of physical work, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, you the people you work with become a family. So if you're looking to get into the trades, I just say try it. Whether it's in between summer, if you're in high school or after that, what I see a lot with people coming out of high school is the pressure to go to college or university. And now I don't know about you, Sean, but well, for me, I was more fortunate because I found the trades and I started working for my dad and I had fun doing that. But also at 30 years old, I started a university program to get my bachelor's in business management. So my point to that is that I think people need to slow down and stop putting so much pressure on themselves. Parents need to stop putting so much pressure on their kids on to make that decision right away. Obviously, finding a job, a career, an education. Education is extremely important, but don't do it because your friends are doing it. Don't follow a career path because your parents are telling you to do it. You are going to work that job the rest of your life. You better like it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I mean, I kind of, in my backstory as well, I went out of high school and went into university right away, and I was taking political science because it was interesting. And I got like almost 2 semesters in and was like, I'm spending a lot of money on something that I don't know where it's going. So then right. I started working, got into sales, got into business, and I went back to school later on for a business degree as well from UBC. Oh, so nice. It's... I think that it's important for people to not feel rushed in making that decision and look at all the available options.
Mm-hmm. And something, I mean, the trades, I would always suggest if you're getting into the trades that to educate yourself, go to school for it, whether it's carpentry or whether you're going to be electrician, plumber, general contractor, there's courses you can take. For me, like I was able to save so much money. I bought a house with my sister at 19. Like, there's so many things I was able to do by going into the trades first that I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. Now, don't get me wrong. If I could go back and do it differently, I probably would. I would probably go to school. But I mean, that's saying having the knowledge I know now, I'm like, oh, I want to get into business management. I want to learn that. And then I could do the trades on the side. Like, I want to have a knowledge of certain things, but it's knowing what you actually are passionate about is that's the key tool that you need to find. So I guess if I can wrap it up with one thing is that education is key. There's so much value in post-secondary education, but it is also very expensive. So if you get a degree in something you don't care about, you have to pay that loan off at some point.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So we'll kind of go into the last couple of questions. Well, last few questions. I have a couple of other things I'm curious about. So for you, this is kind of a really big question. So feel free to answer it however you like. What are some of your goals in life? Like where do you see yourself going maybe in 5 or 10 years?
That is a good question. So I love woodworking. I discovered my passion for woodworking when I was in school for carpentry. So I think I'd love to have my own line of furniture, even if it's like a small line. It doesn't have to be a very big one, like just custom pieces that I release. It maybe just to get me to spend more time in the shop. Having a show on woodworking would be fantastic. I would love to. I'm in love with Switzerland. My wife and I love Switzerland, so she has family there. One of our goals is to own a home in Switzerland. I want to get my bachelor's in business management. Where do I stop? I just want to keep learning. I want to keep having fun doing what I'm doing and keep educating people and using my platform to help people build better and help people build more efficiently. You know, the environment is I'm very passionate about the environment. The building industry can either do a lot of harm or a lot of help for the environment. So I think we can really do our part to step that up. And I see a lot of builders doing that. And I want to continue to push that narrative. And yeah, I'd love to help change the way people look at the skilled trades industry as well. I think we often look at contractors, skilled trades people as, you know, uneducated or, you know, plumbers in movies. You know, they're just like, their butt cracks are out. They're not very intelligent. And it's like, in the skill trades, there are tons of intelligent, educated, successful people. And that is what we need to focus on. We need to stop looking at, well, this person's too expensive. And not to say you need to go hire the most expensive person, but do your homework. And certainly, well, I shouldn't say certainly, but half the people who end up on our show is because they're like, well, this guy was the cheapest and he said he'd do it in cash. Well, cash isn't traceable and that person can take the money and run. So my point in all of this is that I want to help change that perception of people in the skilled trades.
Awesome. So then last question for you, because that was a really good answer to a question that I normally do ask at the end of these. But last question for me, personally, one of my passions, I love books. I collect a lot of books. If you could recommend a book, professional or personal, which one would it be?
Okay, so this is a hard one for me because years ago, are you a paper person or e-reader?
I do both. I prefer paper.
Okay. So my wife bought me a Kobo years ago, and I'm absolutely in love with it. I used to think, you know, paper's the way to go, but I love the fact that I can hold so many books on my Kobo. Now, I know that doesn't answer your question, but I've been really hooked on Stephen King books. This is for like more of the, let's go with the fiction side for now. I love the Dark Tower series. Have you read any of those?
I read the first one.
Okay. I think it's an incredible series. The Bill Hodge series, Mr. Mercedes by Stephen King, incredible. The Stand. Now I started reading this book series called Outlander. And now there's a show about it and people might laugh and be like, well, that's like, I think it's labeled as a historical romance. And this is my wife's favorite book series. And I was like, I don't know if I want to read it. I am so hooked on this series. There's battles. There's history involved. It's such a well-written book. So fiction-wise, I can't really pick one. But out of all the ones I just named, those are some. Oh, and if you're not a reader and you want a really good fiction book that's an easy read, and this might help transition you into reading Dark Matter by Blake Crouch. That's an incredible book. It's a thriller. I had a hard time putting it down. Some of my favorite books I've read on, let's say, I guess nonfiction, Start With Why by Simon Sinek. It's a great business book. And Finding Your Why, A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. Yeah, those are some big ones that help me shape the way I think.
Awesome.
Yeah, what about you?
What about me? Well, you mentioned Simon Sinek. I actually just finished The Infinite Game, which is his newest one.
How'd you like that?
And it's... I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I found it to be an interesting way of looking at things. He obviously writes it a little bit from a business perspective, but I found that it's a good way actually to look at life too, rather than, you know, trying to win and lose these individual things, because that's life. I mean, there is no defined set of rules for everyone that applies to everyone's life. So it's about continuing to play. Well, Mike, thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate you taking the time. For anyone who needs to find them, I will put, of course, links to Mike's social media in the description of the show. From there, I will say, I hope you have a good day.
Thank you very much, Sean. It was great chatting with you.